It's time for the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters on 1430 KYKN. Now here's Jake.
Jake, Rural Matters, so glad for another Friday. End of the work week for many of you. But if not, glad that you're listening at whatever level you're at, and so grateful to be here in KYKN Studios in Salem, the heart of the Willamette Valley, capital of Oregon in Salem. And it's been a pleasure to be here again. And today we're going to deviate from Rural Matters to go to the most urban of all, the Big Apple, New York City. And I am just thrilled, because I've been wanting to do this for a long time, to bring on my youngest sister, my youngest sibling, Helen Atsma. And Helen Atsma, for those of you who don't know, is the editor for Echo Books Publishing, which is part of the greater HarperCollins book, industry. They're huge. And Helen, I'm excited to have you on the program because we're going to talk about some very fun stuff. Welcome to Oregon via the radio. How are you?
I'm well, Jake, and thank you so much for having me. And I love Oregon, my first home, and I would say still my second home. But yeah, we're talking from the Big Apple. I did move from quite a rural environment to an urban one.
Yeah, and you're doing really well there. Helen, to connect all the dots, as people say, okay, you got your sister on, Jake, so what's the deal? We're really excited because, like I said earlier, I've been wanting to interview you for quite a while on the program. But you, Helen, are involved in one of the books that you edited back, I believe it was published in 2022, in May of 2022, Remarkably Bright Creatures, written by Shelby Van Pelt. And this book, Helen, is just, it's been published, I believe, printed several times since that day, pushing north of well over 2 million sales. And you have such an instrumental part of that book by being its editor. And why is this so much fun? Now, Shelby Van Pelt is coming to Salem, Oregon, to do a reading of this book on the 19th of February in the evening. And it was originally going to be in the Grand Theater in Salem, which was off of Liberty. And those 400 reserved seats went like hotcakes, Helen. And it has now been moved to the Salem Convention Center because so many people want to be able to see her, hear about this. And it's exciting. And you are coming out with her and are going to be around, which means I might be able to get to see you. But I think it's amazing, Helen, because this is all part of Salem's official event calendar for one book, one community project, and it runs through February. And the Salem Library has just kind of like taken this book and said, this is the one read we want people to have. How, if you can share, how did this come about to get Shelby to come out here to Oregon?
I will say I'm not sure about that process. I imagine, you know, there's probably a committee at the library that works on picking a book that they think will resonate across a large group of readers in the community. But I know she's really excited to come out there, and I'm so excited to come out there as well. I love Salem. Of course, I grew up on the farm outside of Mount Angel, and then I attended actually Willamette University in Salem. And I'm not part of the event, but I'm just coming to support her and cheer her on and to see some friends from my community that'll be there as well. But yes, this book has had quite a journey. It's been really extraordinary. We've sold actually over 3.5 million copies in the U.S. across the various editions, hardcover, paperback, audiobook, and e. And it has really, I think it has a message that's just resonated with so many readers. Ultimately, I think a message of hope and a message that just says you're never too old to start again and to lean into living. You know, when the book came out, we were still pretty sick in the pandemic.
Right.
I think a lot of people were feeling really isolated and you know, and I think feeling a little hopeless about things. And this novel follows the story of Tova, a woman in her 70s whose husband has passed away. We learn that many, many years ago, her son went missing and is presumed to be dead. And She has a job kind of to keep herself busy as a caretaker at a local aquarium. And when she's there, she befriends an octopus, Marcellus, who, you know, octopuses are in reality extremely smart animals. And we get his perspective of seeing this woman come in on a daily basis and his take on things. He knows he has a limited number of days to live, basically, because octopuses have great Pacific octopuses have a certain kind of lifespan. And as the novel goes on, he also knows some things about her son who went missing in a boating accident, or we don't quite know what happened, but Marcellus does. And it is really through her encounters with this amazing animal and then the community that she starts falling into, where she realizes she doesn't necessarily have to just pack it in and move into a different kind of living, but actually she can find community right where she is and lean into that and also get some closure in her life. So it's been really, for me, a remarkable journey to see how this book has moved so many people, both here in the United States and abroad. And it's also going to be a Netflix movie here in a couple months with Sally Field starring. So that's going to be exciting as well.
Yeah, it really is, Helen. And I know I've shared this with you, your favorite niece, Lydia and I, we went to the Barnes and Noble a year ago, Labor Day. And they had a triangular setup of tables and books. So you walked in, you're facing the point of that triangular setup, if you can imagine that. And then we go, oh my gosh, there it is. Look at that. Remarkably bright creatures. And I just had to sit there and stare at that. And I got a little giddy, Helen, because I'm so proud of you. And I kind of looked to the ladies over at the desk because they're staring at me. And I point and go, hey, my sister edited this book, okay? Just so you know. And I don't think I killed the sales that day. I don't think so. But I love the little octopus kind of doll, if you will, that they had sitting on top of that. And it to me is, you know, when we think about our beginnings, Helen, you know, you were obviously the last, as far as the siblings go, to, you know, to grow up on the farm and then be able to go from, you know, Mount Angel to Willamette and Salem after high school, and then move in such a direction that you are at right now over the years. And so, Helen, we got a couple of minutes in this segment. You know, talk to us a little bit about growing up on the dairy and then how it has helped you where you are now, if you want to share that.
For sure. I mean, it was such a beautiful way to grow up. And I think I will be honest, I did not always appreciate it.
No, none of us did.
At the time, I think.
Yeah, got a little dirty out there.
You know, and I think we were so blessed too, because our parents had and have a really strong marriage. Because, you know, when you're in a situation where your family life and your work life and a lot of your social life is all in one place, hopefully those things are in harmony and the people in those groups are mostly in harmony. And, you know, and we really had that with Dad and Mom. And I got to grow up really understanding fundamentally, maybe not fundamentally, but on a basic level as a young kid, what my parents did for a living. And I could see how hard they worked and also how much they loved it, you know, how much Dad loved the animals. I think Mom really relished her role, also supporting the farm and doing the books and doing everything to keep the household running. And, you know, you guys were all around there to tease me, your little sister. It was, I think, a different thing for me than for you growing up. My sense is when my older brothers were growing up, they really had to work on the farm because, you know, your labor was really a necessity for the farm to function. I think by the time I came around, the future of Cascade Butte Dairy was not resting on the shoulders of Helen Osma. But the fact is, if you're growing up on a farm, you're going to be doing work on a farm. So feeding calves from a young age, always helping out with the upkeep of the place, understanding the rhythms when it was, you know, silage season, just the various crops that would be coming in and be processed, knowing that, okay, there's going to be some really long days ahead. And being part of that, even as a young kid, I think it really teaches you the value of work and also the gratification that can come from a good day's work. You know, I think mom always told me too, because I started working sometimes for other farmers in high school or doing other jobs in the community. And she would always say, all right, don't keep your hands in your pockets.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, she meant that, I think, in a literal sense. Don't be the person walking around looking kind of aimless, but also obviously metaphorically, like show up ready to show what you have to offer and get in there and do it, you know? And I think that is just a lesson that has served me super well my entire life, even in an entirely different line of work. But certainly the job I have now, you know, even though it's in a skyscraper in downtown Manhattan, it's also a job that seeps into every corner of my life. You know, I'm often reading news from the weekend. Often I'll get a phone call at 5 p.m. where there's something that has to be dealt with, you know, over the course of the evening or outside of normal working hours. And, you know, people deserve and should have a good, healthy work-life balance. But I think also learning how to incorporate your work into your daily life, if it's work you love doing, can be a good thing to learn and be aware of. And I think certainly we had that
100%.
Also on the farm, just by the very nature of growing up there.
100%. I'm talking with my sister, Helen Atsma, from Manhattan. This is Jake, Rural Matters. Hang on, the next segment coming up right after this.
Back to the Blue Star Gas, Rural Matters on 1430 KYKN. Once again, here's Jake.
Jake, Rural Matters, back Friday the 13th. Friday the 13th, and I'm looking at my producer, Hunter. You're a suspicious guy, aren't you? Yeah, especially with sports. Yeah, I don't know. I've never really dove into that too much. But also, giving you guys all a warning, guys, it's tomorrow is Valentine's Day. There's still time, depending on where you are. Better hurry up. Get it done. Valentine's Day tomorrow. With me, my sister, Helen Atsma. Helen, you got to see a lot of stuff growing up, and we were talking about in the previous segment, you went on to Willamette University. Talk about how Willamette shaped you and where your trajectory kind of went from there, Helen, because you've been kind of all over the map. Fire away on this.
It was a little bit of a circuitous journey. But yeah, I went to obviously Silverton High School, where you went as well. And from there, you know, very close to home, to Willamette. I had a great 4 years there. Really wonderful professors. And I double majored in English and in Spanish. Worked at the Book Bin in Salem downtown while I was studying there. And, you know, it was a really wonderful education. From there, I had kind of had two sort of career paths I had been thinking about. And one was maybe teaching English as a second language. I'd always been interested in foreign languages with Spanish, and also growing up speaking Frisian with my folks at home. Also hearing a lot of Dutch. I was just interested in languages. And the other I thought was maybe getting a PhD in English literature and becoming a professor. So the first thing I actually did right after college is I moved to Japan. Salem, Oregon has a sister city relationship with Kawagoe in Japan. And at the time, and I think probably still, there are a number of English teachers from the Salem area who go there for a period of 1 to 3 years and help support English teaching in the public elementary schools there. And that was a really fun, wonderful year. I also got to learn a lot of Japanese. I came back from that, and I had a year where I was trying to figure out what to do. I did apply for a number of graduate programs and got in, but I also remembered seeing on the bulletin board at Willamette a flyer for something called the Columbia Publishing Course at Columbia University here in New York, and it was kind of a summer-long program, and it was supposed to sort of teach you the basics of what you could expect if you were to work in either book or magazine publishing, and then to help you find a job thereafter. And it was a pretty competitive program to get into. And I just thought, you know what, this sounds super fun. And
right.
Something I could really
jump into right away.
I remember
that,
grad school,
Helen.
For many years.
I remember when you were going through that phase. I remember that very well. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, And I think I had no idea at the time that book publishing was really so based in New York City. My thought was, I'm going to go out there, get that certificate, and then come back and get a job in like San Francisco or Seattle. I did not really have my sights set on New York City. But as I did the course, I came to understand really the bulk of book publishing in the United States is based in New York City. And so if you want, you know, they're not every publishing house is here, but 90% of it, I think, happens in this area. And that was also before remote work. You know, I think there are different ways in now. But I decided to give it a go. And so I moved here. I didn't have a job, but I had enough money to get me through 6 months. And I thought, well, if I don't have anything by the end of that 6 months, then I'm just going to go back to Oregon. But sure enough, I got a job as an editorial assistant at Little Brown, a wonderful publishing house, and it's very much an apprenticeship kind of a deal on the editorial side. And so you first spend many years working for people who are already senior editors or executive editors, kind of just learning by doing. And throughout the course of time, you start to acquire your own books, hopefully, to edit and publish. And sometimes you inherit some books at the publishing house where you are. You move around a bit, and you know, you start to build a career that way. I also had fallen in love with my husband, Dan, and he had lived in New York for quite some time earlier in his life. Then he had lived in Salem. His family is from Oregon, and we had met there. But he was also eager to move back to New York City, and so we got engaged and married, and then he came back here, and that sort of solidified my interest and happiness about being on this side of the country.
Amazing. I'll give you a chance to catch your breath there, because Dan, and then you've got that beautiful daughter of yours, Hendrika, and just the name, you know what, she's going to go, no matter what school she goes to, there's never going to be another Hendrika. That is she's such a wonderful young lady, you and Dan both. And by his own right, your husband is a tremendous chef and loves to paint. And you can kind of plug that a little bit. Go ahead and talk about Dan. That'd be cool.
Yeah, Dan's a painter and artist. He also spent many years out here. He went to school out here as well, and he paints incredible paintings. And, you know, New York is really also where the heart of the artist scene is. In the country too, although I think there's wonderful art and artists anywhere. And in fact, while I'm on your show, I'd love to plug his friend who has now passed away, Dan May, or D.E. May, I think was one of the most tremendous artists in the Salem area. And right now the gallery at Willamette University, the Hallie Brown Ford Museum there, has a wonderful retrospective of Dan May's work that's up, I think, through mid-March. So.
Oh, yeah.
If
By
you're
all
looking
means.
To see some art in Salem, please go check that out, because it's just incredible.
Is there a go-to site where people can check that out and then go in, or is it very just come on down and go over? How's that work?
I think their hours are like noon to five.
Wonderful.
Most days a week, but you know, if you look up Willamette University Art Gallery and noodle around, I'm sure the listeners can find their way to the
I have a sneaking suspicion you're going to go there yourself while you're out here, right?
I'm hoping to, very much so.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And Dan actually was just out there a couple weeks ago.
Wonderful. Helen, let's, you know, you started with Little Brown, and if my memory serves, Benjamin Percy is a Eugene author that you, I believe you edited one of his books, if I'm correct.
I've always had an affinity for authors from the West Coast, and you know, Shelby is one of them, and Ben Percy, who actually I think he grew up more in the Bend area. He's a wonderful writer. Refresh, Refresh is an amazing story collection that I did not edit, but that was kind of the first book of his that kicked him onto the national scene. But I had the great privilege of editing several of his books later on. You know, and I think with my career in book publishing, I've always had an eye for those books and those writers who are telling stories that are not necessarily central to New York City or to large urban areas, although certainly I have books on my list by incredible writers who live here as well. But there is a soft spot in my heart for hearing storytelling and voices that I think bring us to you know, the communities that are thriving and vibrant and are all over this country. And certainly with Shelby's work, Shelby grew up in Tacoma. The town in Remarkably Bright Creatures isn't like a real town, but, you know, picture any number of small towns on the Puget Sound, and it takes after those. And those characteristics immediately warmed me to that novel in particular.
We've got just less than a minute, and we'll carry this over to the other side, Helen. Talk a little bit about what it's like to be an editor, and then I want to do a little bit of a deep dive on the other side about that. Got about 40 seconds.
It is such a privilege, is what I would say, and it's a real joy. And it all starts with the writers with whom I work and their talent and their voice and their originality. So what I'll say before we leave is just, I have to have that spark. There's the voice and the you know, nuts and bolts of the story that is very hard to edit for. And I would say most of what I am acquiring and working on is already very much there on the page, but I'm here to get it to the next level.
Yeah. And it's a tremendous responsibility that I could only, I can't even imagine doing that, Helen. We're talking with my sister, Helen Atzma, and she is at Echo Publishing. And we're going to be right back after this. Hang on, hopefully good news.
The conversation continues on the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters of 1430 KYKN.
Jake, Rural Matters, hope all is well. Wherever you are, wherever the sound of my voice is hitting you, hang on with my sister Helen Atzma. She is with Echo Books. I'm so excited to talk. Helen's coming out because of the wonderful work of the book that you edited, Helen, with Remarkably Bright Creatures, and the time that's going to be spent in Salem is honoring that book at the convention center. I think it's amazing. Helen, I'm going to throw this out at you, and you tell me what you think of it. You know, you edited this book and other ones, and I'm going to use this metaphor. You know, I think of a band that I enjoyed so much growing up, and that was the Beatles. And they put so much music together, but they couldn't have done it without what they call the fifth Beatle, which was George Martin, and he was the producer. Can you kind of look at your role as being an editor? And I know you don't want to overdo your role because it's about the author and the author's vision and all that, but you're taking somebody's book and they trust you with it. And how does that feel, Helen, to have that? And then they say, okay, have at it. What's it like and how does it work? Are you all right talking about that?
It is such a privilege. And I think there's so many pieces of it that go beyond even the actual editing. The editing is super important. It's where the work begins. And it begins, I think, from a place of trust, hopefully, that you establish with the writer. And I just view editing as a very close, careful conversation where I'm pointing out how I'm feeling with the read, you know, so I'm confused here. This feels frankly a little boring to me. I wonder if we should cut it. You know, it's lost a little momentum here. You introduced this plot thread here and then it never gets wrapped up. Like, we need to talk about it. Maybe there's too many people for the readers to be able to follow, you know, with coherency throughout the novel as a whole. So, you know, ideally with a work of fiction, the voice is there. Obviously, the bulk of the plot is there, but I'm here to address, you know, anything remaining that maybe it's too long, it needs some pruning, maybe there's some clarity that can be brought in along the way, and to really help the author realize their vision for the book the best that I can. I also check for grammar and inconsistencies and things like that, but I am then followed up by an actual copy editor whose whole job is really to fix every comma and every misplaced modifier and all of that. So, you know, I do catch everything I can as I can, but the bulk of my work is more developmental and about thinking about the plot. Beyond that, yes, as a publisher, then you are working with the author to think about the cover. You're thinking about the copy. You're thinking about, you know, who can we ask to maybe provide an endorsement in support of this book? You're thinking about the sales force that we work with that then is going to try and sell it into accounts at Barnes & Noble and amazing independent bookstores and Amazon and maybe Target. you know, and how can you help introduce this book to them? How can you help them as the editor and publisher do their jobs to the best of their ability? You're working with a production team to make sure that the interior looks good. And, you know, if it's nonfiction and has a photo insert, does that look good? You're working with your publicity team and making sure that they have what they need to try and get the news out about this book. Hopefully you'll get some NPR for the author. You'll get reviews. If it's fiction, maybe you'll get, you know, a book club nod from one of the major book clubs in this country. And you're also working in about three different calendars. So right now on my mind are books that we are publishing this week. I'm editing books that we will publish next year, and I'm acquiring books that we will publish in 2 years. So it's,
you're always thinking ahead.
You have many things in the air, simultaneously. I think that's both sometimes the hard part of the job, and it's also very much the fun part of the job.
Helen, I think about, and we're going to just, we'll stick with the Remarkably Bright Creatures because it's done incredible. So you get all of the aforementioned things put together, and there it is, cover, everything, story's ready to go, and it hits the market, and it does, I'll use the word, remarkably well. How does that feel? How did that feel for you to see something be so successful and have, you know, very instrumental part of it, and certainly for, you know, Shelby Van Pelt, I mean, must have been quite a rush. Helen, talk about that a little bit. Do you guys like sit and like somebody's watching the stock market go up and they're watching the, you know, whatever it is they invested in? Fill me in on that. What's it like, Helen? Talk about that.
Well, it's really exciting. With this book, there's a book club with Jenna Bush, Jenna's book club, and she had picked it for her show. And that immediately, you know, got it out the gate in a big way. So it did, in its first week of publication, it did debut on the New York Times bestseller list. And there's really nothing better or bigger that you can hope for than that. I will say, then the following week, it immediately fell off, which is not uncommon. But what we were noticing was that the sales were remaining pretty consistent. And as the months progressed, you know, Amazon gave it a big nod a few months after publication. They called it the best book of the year thus far. This was like in June of that year. And then it got another bump. And then what happened was it started snowballing, and the word of mouth on this book just really started exploding. And I think as publishers, what you can do is get it out of the gate. You can hopefully get great reviews. You can hopefully get a book club pick for something like this. But ultimately, it's going to be about the readers who are going to take it to the next level. And people just started telling their friends and their moms and, you know, their cousins and whoever, you know, their book clubs, hey, this is the next book we should read. And so it then went back on the New York Times bestseller list toward the end of that year, many months later. And then it had a really super long run, you know, thereafter. But it wasn't, it was, you know, it had a great start. It had a start, though, that is exceptional, but happens. But I think what really happened with this book was the long tail on it was so exciting. And yeah, for sure, as you're seeing copies go out the door, it's extremely thrilling and exciting. And I think that it's also a book, again, of such hope and about making connections in your community. You know, I also feel very good about the message, and that's exciting as well. And I think for Shelby, too, it's just been kind of a dream.
Well, and you look at things today, Helen, with all of the options people have to either, I like to use the word brain candy, whether you want to go down the sports route, you want to go down the movie route, and yet people are still going to pick up a book and actually get the actual book. When people, you know, let's face it, there's so much electronic stuff. I don't want to even say it's distracting. It's just the way things are today. But it's got to be, you know, it's got to say something to be in such a competitive place to be for people's time, let alone their money. What do you think?
I mean, that's exactly what we're competing with. I don't see us as ever competing against other books or other writers. I see it as competing against people like doom scrolling on Facebook.
Yeah, right.
And I do think with the right books, what we have to offer is so much more rich and rewarding than that. And I think we as a country are really suffering from that kind of doom scrolling and short attention span to a lot of things. I think it's really hurting our moral psyche. And I think if people sometimes could put that down and just give themselves a minute to breathe and read a story of someone else's life, whether fiction or nonfiction, and let kind of the truth that that book has to offer sink in, you know, I just think it would be great for all of us. My job is to make sure that the read delivers.
Right. Know? Pressure, right, Helen?
And that's the great fun of it. And so, yeah, to find something that cuts through the noise is really important. I think audiobooks have been a really exciting growth area in book publishing. In some ways, podcasts have kind of reminded people, oh, yeah, you can listen to a whole book as well. You know, and now that people don't need to buy like a 12 CD set to do that. And that's another great way. This particular audiobook is fantastic. And so I highly recommend it as well. But we've also found, you know, I think for a while ago, we thought, oh, everybody's going to be reading ebooks
right
on the road. And certainly ebooks are a big part of the market. But I think what we found is that a lot of people are looking at screens all day long. And when they come home, if they're going to read a book, the last thing they want to do is read it on a screen. And so that's why you have people going to Barnes & Noble.
They do, Helen.
Ordering print books. Yeah, and it's the object of it, you know, and making, and I also want to make the object beautiful so that it can sit in someone's hands. There's a tactile pleasure to it. You're turning the pages, and hopefully you can forget about your dumb phone for a few minutes. Like, I need more lessons than that myself, you know.
Oh my gosh,
but
Helen.
Hopefully that's what we can offer.
Right on. Talking to my sister, Helen Atzma, Echo Books Publishing. Going to be right back with the last segment. Hang on, everybody.
Back to the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters on 1430 KYKN. Once again, here's Jake.
Jake, back with you. Rural Matters, last segment. And I hope your day is freaking glorious. Whatever you're going to do, be safe. And spring is in the air. Maybe not so much where I'm talking to right now. My sister, Helen Atzma, in Manhattan, the Big Apple. Rural Matters hits the Big Apple. I think this is kind of fun, Helen. It's really cool talking to you. Helen.
I agree.
You know, Helen, you grew up on the dairy. We talked about that a bit. And then you were one of several Atzmas that became county dairy princes. How'd that start out? How'd you become a dairy princess?
I mean, Mary County Dairy Princess, and of course, Lydia was as well.
So was Alice.
My sister, Glenda, who
yeah
wasn't great at it, was just a runner-up. Sorry, Glenda.
And we've had,
you know, it was
we've
had. Actually, when I was at Willamette,
yeah,
it was such a great opportunity to represent the industry, you know, going to elementary schools, visiting all sorts of community organizations, county fairs, the state fair, of course, and talking to folks about farming and farmers and cows. And I will say, I give that experience also a lot of credit for helping me with public speaking, and learning how to stand in front of a crowd, you know, and just speaking kind of off the cuff, and speaking with confidence and passion about, you know, an industry that I love, that's given our family so much over the years. And certainly gave me a lot. So that was a great way to give back when I was going to college.
Let me ask you this, Helen, because you are, you know, you're in Manhattan and you ride the subways, I assume, you know, to get to work.
I do not have a car.
No, I wouldn't. I would not. You'll co-mingle with people, and they'll find, you know, as people get to know about you, and you'll say, yeah, I grew up on a dairy east of Mount Angel, Oregon. And it's like a dairy farm. Would you ever get questions about what it's like from literally, you know, I don't want to say city slickers, but what kind of can you get rid of some connotations that surround it? Do the people ask you what it's like and what their questions might be out there?
For sure. I've gotten a lot of questions about it over the years. It certainly is an unusual background to have here. I think it's probably an unusual background, you know, for people in downtown Salem or whatever to have too. But I think there's always curiosity about it. I will say the thing about New York City is, you know, the irony is I am raising a native New Yorker with our daughter, Hendrika, but the people here do come from everywhere
right,
in America and around the world. And so my experience is a unique one. And coming from a dairy farm, you know, the person sitting next to me could have a very unique, singular story about growing up in rural India and like made their way here. So it's not, it's kind of a hard place to raise eyebrows because there are so many singular stories of how and why people have come to this place to work. And it's a really special city, but certainly mine is one of those. And it's one I'm very proud of.
Well, you know, Helen, I was 16 when you were born. And so it wasn't too long and I was on my way out the door to school far away. But my thoughts of you growing up is how driven you were. Literally, in my mind, you had fun. You really did, and all of that. But you hit the ground running, and I would confess that most of our siblings that you know are very much goal orientated. If someone's listening right now, they're catching part of this program and hearing what we're talking about. Talk to a young person that's in high school and they want to be a writer. They've got ideas burning in their head. What would you tell them? Because you're in the big leagues. You're in the epicenter of publishing. What would you say to a young gal or guy right now?
I would say start with reading, you know, and read everything you can. And I think try and figure out what the story is that you want to tell that is either bouncing off or maybe jiving with or in community with what you're reading, and kind of start really paying attention to like, why does this book work this way? You know, I think a lot of writers are pretty self-educated and there's a lot you can learn from just really picking apart a book. I had a really great experience with my high school English teachers. And I also think there's a lot that students can learn from them. And then I would say, start writing. There are many, many books on how to do this. You know, some people say you got to put your butt in a chair for 30 minutes a day or more and try and get something out every day. Some people really feel like, no, it's something that comes in spurts. So I think as to the how or why, all of my writers come at it differently. But I really think if you start with a foundation in reading, that is only going to help your writing. And then as you can, if you can take classes and find community with other writers. Shelby Van Pelt did not have an MFA in writing. She always loved to write. She did take some classes at her local community college, and that's actually where the spark for Marcellus the Octopus was born. And she developed, you know, a group of writers in her, I think, neighborhood, her immediate area, and they cheered each other along. And so I think her story, and she also didn't have connections really to the publishing industry. She cold queried her agent, and you know, on the strength of her pitch, the agent took a look at the work and then, you know, fell in love and took it on. And I think sometimes there's a feeling that New York publishing is impenetrable and hard to crack into if you're not from here or know a lot of people. But again, some of my biggest success stories have come with writers who really actually come from such a different place that it is probably the very thing that is making their writing arresting and unique.
Awesome. You know, Helen, you are incredibly busy, you know, and you and Dan, and then of course raising Hendrika, and she's now a teenager, and she's just such a beautiful gal. How do you balance it all, Helen? How do you keep perspective? Because I know some numbers that you've given to me. You have a tremendous amount of responsibility, and you have to be a risk taker. How do you keep from going insane, Helen?
Well, I have, you know, a wonderful husband who is the primary caregiver for our daughter. So he's here when she comes home from school. And honestly, Dan really helps make our place a home. Hendrika is amazing. I think maybe your listeners will be interested to learn too. She's an avid equestrian. She rides horses at a stable in the Bronx, and that is her outlet and her passion in life. And going to those stables, even though they're within the New York City boundaries, it's so fun. I love just the smell of the horses and the straw and, you know, the hay and everything. It kind of brings me back to the farm in some ways every weekend. So that's very fun. Our church community is really meaningful to us and provides a place of solace in this big, wild city. And I would say Inwood, Manhattan, our neighborhood, is not what you think of when you think of Manhattan. It's not a place of skyscrapers. There's actually an enormous park right across the street that is totally frozen over right now. But, you know, we regularly see eagles, bald eagles, seals sometimes on the dock, herons, all kinds of, you know, wildlife and bird life. And, you know, anytime I need just a time to take a breather, I love to just go for a walk in the park. So we have a lot of nature and beauty here and community, and then regular trips to Oregon, of course.
We love seeing you. You know, I'm excited. I really am. It's just, you know, you'll be out here next week, and I'll get some glimpses of you. I know your schedule is packed as it should be, and that's a wonderful thing. You know, Helen, real quick, we've got just about 2 minutes. Some of your favorite things about your job. What really gets you stoked in the morning, and what are you excited about going forward? If you can do any spoiler alert at all.
I love working with the people on my team, and I love working with the writers. And I think reading a manuscript that has been sent to me and I don't know what to expect, and I open it up and I'm just totally have my breath taken away with it or by it. It's so exciting and fun, and there's really nothing like it. I will say that this December, we are publishing a novel called Winter Song by a writer named Rebecca Lee Morales, who lives in Eugene. I'm actually going to meet her in person for the first time on this trip as well. It's an incredible story taking place in rural Minnesota in the early 1980s about a young man who has been released from prison for a crime that he says he did not commit. And he now has to face this small town.
Wow.
Where everyone thinks he
wow.
did do it,
wow.
and he's going to try and clear his name. And that's a beautiful story of redemption, I think. And I'm very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, you're going to have some time with that with the author as you're out here.
Yeah.
And Helen, what do you hope in the last 35 seconds? What do you hope Shelby gets accomplished at the Salem Convention Center on the 19th at 7:00?
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a full house, so I am excited for her to see and be delighted by the people of Salem. It's such a great community, and I know the people showing up love her book, or they're super excited to read her book, so I'm hoping she can just feel the love and the energy from this corner of the Northwest. But I know she's already, you know, she's a Northwest native, and I think she wouldn't expect anything less.
That's amazing, Helen. Helen, you've always been so driven, and you were and still are a perfectionist. I think that bodes well with you, and it also carries into your home life as well. I can't thank you enough for wanting to come on and giving me some time here on Real Matters, Helen. It's been an honor to talk to you, sweetheart. And you take great care of yourself.
Thanks for having me. I love you, brother.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you know what? I look forward to seeing you at whatever level I can, but I'm going to be in the audience and sitting with Lydia, and we're going to have a date that night, a little daddy-daughter date. And so we're really stoked. Helen Atzma, Echo Publishing, Jake, Rural Matters. God bless. We'll catch up next week.
This has been the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters every Friday at noon on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.